This is the title for tonight's lesson, Churches Helping Brethren in Need, a case study. And you'll understand why the lesson is entitled in that way here in just a few moments. I want to say a few things, though, here at the beginning before we get into the meat of this lesson. I don't think Blake will mind me saying this at all, but this lesson was requested. Blake Denton asked me to preach on the specific things that I'll be preaching on tonight. And I want to commend Blake for that, not just for making the request, but for the reason behind the request. He has been studying some of these issues here recently, and very much wants to know the truth. He wants to know what the Bible teaches on the matters that we'll be discussing tonight. And of course, knowing then what God says on the matter, he wants to observe that. He wants to do it. And so I certainly commend him for that, and I hope that we're all of the same disposition. There may be those who might go to the website and download this particular sermon. Those who are not present here tonight who may listen to the sermon, and I hope that you will have the same disposition, that you are willing to study these matters, that the only thing you want to find out is the truth, and then having learned the truth to practice it faithfully throughout your days. So here's really an explanation as to why we have this title. In August 2016, the southern part of Louisiana was devastated by flooding. Some areas received about 24 inches of rain in a 48-hour period. That's pretty close to a deluge right there. And sometimes the phrase catastrophic damage can get a little bit overused, but I don't know that that would be, you know, an overuse here in this particular case. Here is a map showing you the 20 parishes in southern Louisiana that I believe were all declared to be federal disaster areas. Again, the effects were very devastating. In fact, to be more specific about that, 13 people died as a result of this flooding, and the property damage was estimated at $10 to $15 billion. Again, that's how far-reaching the effects were of this flooding. But now, of particular interest to us is the fact that 14 families in the Southside Church of Christ in Gonzales, Louisiana, received very heavy damage to their homes. Cost to repair these homes came to about $677,000. And of course, the brethren here, as well as brethren all over the country and perhaps even across the world, they learned of this situation in regard to these brethren there in Gonzales, Louisiana. So what was the response from brethren when they heard of this situation? Well, Pratmont, the church here, along with many other local churches, in fact, I corresponded with one of the elders over there this week, Brother R.J. Evans, to make sure of the number, and he said about 90 different churches, and as well as some other individuals, sent money to the elders of the Southside Church of Christ to distribute then to those families in need. Not surprisingly, the need was very quickly met. In fact, they had to return about 100 checks. In fact, one of the things that R.J. Evans told me this week, he says, I am convinced that if we had not put out a plea for churches to stop sending money, we may very well have received over $3 million. He went on to tell me, he said, if you're talking to anybody, and it sounds like they've lost faith in their brethren, he said, please tell them to contact me, because I've got a few things that I'd like to say to them. So again, the need was overwhelming, but again, the need was very quickly met. All right, so here's the question of the hour. Did the church here have authority to do this? Now, instinctively we might say, well, how in the world could we not have authority for something like this? As good a work as this was, as desperate as these brethren were, as great as they, how could an act of love such as this, how could there possibly be anything wrong with it? But you know what? We don't determine issues of authority that way, do we? Boy, there are just times when something can just so much seem like the right and the loving thing to do, but again, we still have to determine from the New Testament if there is authority for such. To be more specific, does the New Testament in any way indicate God's approval for what we did and the way we did it? Can we find God's approval in any form in the New Testament? Again, not only for what we did, but the way we did it. Well, I would submit that yes, there is crystal clear authority for not only what we did, but the manner in which we went about it. What we and many other local churches, as we said, about 90 of them, what we and these 90 other churches did mirrors a situation that is described in the New Testament. To be specific, local churches in Macedonia, Achaia, and Galatia all sent funds to relieve the needs of the saints in the church at Jerusalem. Now that relief effort is described in several places in the New Testament. When you read Romans 15, 25 through 33, 1 Corinthians 16, 1 through 4, and then all of 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, those passages are all describing the very same relief effort. Now, I don't know exactly how many local churches were involved, but a pretty good number of them. But there was a great need in the church at Jerusalem, and all of these different local churches sent directly to that need so that those brethren could be relieved. So what we're saying, and we're going to illustrate this with some charts here in just a minute. God showed us how to do it. And we did it just the way God showed us. Isn't that the way it's supposed to work? God says, okay, there are going to be situations of benevolence that are going to come up. Not just among your own, but among brethren elsewhere. And here's you an example. Here's you an example. I'm going to give you a picture of how these local churches in the New Testament did it. And we have observed that picture, and we did it just the way God showed us to do it. So let's illustrate that. You have as circles here, these would represent the different local churches. Again, it would be much more than four, but local churches throughout Galatia, Macedonia, and Achaia. They all send directly to the church in Jerusalem to relieve the needy Christians who are there in Jerusalem. Now, as we read those different passages from Romans 15 and 1 Corinthians 16, 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, we gain some more information. For example, we learn that each local church chose its own messengers to travel with Paul to deliver this aid. And we'll talk some more about the significance of that as we go through the lesson tonight. All right, so that's a really simple diagram of what was done by these churches here in the New Testament. Well, in the case of Pratmont and these 90 other local churches, They sent directly to the church in Gonzales, Louisiana, to relieve the needy Christians there. Those look pretty much the same. Look exactly the same to me, right? And we'll talk some more about this in a minute, but you'll notice that there's nothing in between, right? There's no church, no institution, there's no middleman in here whatsoever, right? In the first case, the churches of Macedonia and Achaia and Galatia, they send directly to the need there in Jerusalem. Pratmont, along with all of these other churches, did exactly the same thing that we read about. Now, times have changed, obviously, from that time. We didn't have to have somebody drive over there and deliver the check. Our messenger would have been, I guess, the U.S. Postal Service. Is that how we sent the check, Chad? Okay. So that would have been our messenger in this case. But we did have some control over how much we were going to send over there, and our elders made that decision. Again, these are some things we'll come back and talk about some more in just a minute. Now, before we delve any further into this situation, I want to talk about, for just a few minutes, some scenarios under which we would not have done this. We would not have done this. We would not have sent this aid in the manner we did if, first of all, each family had been able to provide for its own needs. 1 Thessalonians 4, 11 and 12, also 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 12, put the responsibility for the care of a family upon who? Upon the man, the head of the house. It's your job. It's your job to provide for your family. And so if they had been able to do that, then we would not have sent the aid necessary. We would not have done this if these families had other family members who could have met their needs. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8 says, if a man does not provide for his own, he is worse than an unbeliever. Now in that context, he's talking about family members who might not necessarily be under your roof. He's talking about parents you might have or grandparents who are unable to care for themselves now. And so, if the man of the house is unable to care, then other family members have to step in at that point and do what they can, right? We would not have done this if the Southside Church would have been able to meet their needs, if they had had the funds necessary to do this. In Acts chapter 2, in Acts chapter 4, and in Acts chapter 6, we have examples of the church in Jerusalem caring for its own, the needy who were among them. And so if the head of the house cannot do it, if there's other family members who can do it, if the church at that particular location is not able to do it, it's really only then that we can step in. Obviously, the need was so enormous, and we've already talked about the details of that. Obviously, the need was so enormous that help from others was needed. And certainly, we were glad to provide that. All right. We've talked about what we did in terms of sending that aid to those needy saints there in Gonzales, Louisiana. But let's spend at least a good bit of the lesson tonight talking about what we did not do. And we need to talk about these things because these are some issues that have been divisive among brethren. And so we have to have a clear understanding of some of the principles raised in all of this. First of all, what we did not do is that the church here did not send any money for non-Christians in the affected area. Now, please understand, it was not because we didn't care. There were a whole lot of Christians who were affected by this, but there were many, many more non-Christians. We didn't send. The church here did not send any money for non-Christians. You remember those passages that we talked about earlier from Romans 15, 1 Corinthians 16, 2 Corinthians 8 and 9? Let's go back and pick out a few verses from those passages to see exactly who the target of this aid was. Now, do you think that other people in Jerusalem were affected? In other words, were only Christians in need at that time? There would have been many others as well, right? But let's look at who the target was for this aid. 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 1, as Paul is talking about how this money is going to be used, he refers to it as the collection for the saints. In Romans 15 and verse 25, Paul says, I am going to Jerusalem to minister to the saints. In Romans 15 and verse 26, the very next verse, he speaks of it as a contribution for the poor among the saints. In that same chapter, down in verse 31, he asks those brethren to pray that my service be acceptable to the saints. In 2 Corinthians 8 and verse 4, he speaks of this whole effort as something that was ministering to the saints. 2 Corinthians 9 and verse 1, again, concerning the ministering to the saints. Now, not only do we have these passages that speak of this specific relief effort, but in every case of benevolence that we read about, that is where churches were involved, when churches sent aid to others, in every single case, it is specifically said that saints were the objects of that help. In Acts 2, in Acts 4, in Acts 6, at the end of chapter Acts 11, and then these passages that we're looking at right here. And so the evidence is overwhelming and convincing in terms of who the church can help from its funds, saints, 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 in every single case. Now, having said that, I believe it's important for us to also point this out. Individually, we most certainly could help those who were not Christians. Look at with me at Galatians 6 and verse 10. And make no mistake about it, this is a passage addressed to individuals and to their responsibility. Remember in class this morning, we talked about how we need to really be careful about distinguishing in those passages between collective responsibilities and individual responsibilities. But in Galatians 6 and verse 10, therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are of the household of faith. Nothing in the world wrong, in fact, everything would be right about us being stirred to compassion for all of those affected by this. For all I know, some of you may have donated money to the Red Cross to help in the particular relief efforts for this. For all I know, some of you may have traveled over there and offered some personal help. I don't know what different ones of you may have done. And that would have been a great thing if you had done that. Individually, we don't have this limitation imposed upon us. But in terms of what the local church can do, that limitation is clearly put there in place. And if we're going to be faithful to the Lord, if we're going to follow the pattern that He has given us, if we're going to follow these examples which are binding upon us, then we have to observe that limitation. But here's something else that the church here did not do. And we briefly alluded to this earlier. The church here did not send money through a middleman. It was sent directly to the need. To be more specific about that, we did not send the money to a sponsoring church, which is kind of the terminology that's sometimes used in reference to churches that serve in this capacity. We did not send the money to a sponsoring church, one that would be responsible for collecting all the funds from the various churches, and then they in turn distributing those funds to whomever might be in need. That's not the way we went about it. And that's not the way those churches in Macedonia and Achaia and Galatia went about it. Now, we can't ever forget
that those churches were taught what? They were taught the commandments of the Lord. And so when we see them executing plans like this with the Lord's approval, we know what? We know that that's our pattern to follow. They didn't send the money through a middleman, and so neither did we. We did not send the money to any benevolent organization who would then be responsible for relieving the need. And as we'll see here in just a minute, that is a practice common even among some of our own brethren. That's not the way we went about it. That doesn't follow the pattern that we diagrammed earlier. All right, now to illustrate the problem here, I want us to look at what some churches do. All right, so you've got the local churches, however many it may be, and whatever case of need might come up. Now, in the diagram we saw earlier, what would be right beside? What would all these arrows point to? It would point to the church that was in need, to the elders of that particular church, for them then to take care of whomever might be in need. But in the case of some, it's not sent directly to the need. What we have some brethren doing is churches, along with individuals, send donations to an organization like, and this is one that operates even today, they send contributions, donations to this Churches of Christ Disaster Response Team. And then this organization would then in turn send to churches wherever who may have people in need. Now, hopefully you can see one big difference between what we diagrammed earlier and what you see here. There is a middle man here. Just another little snippet of information concerning this Churches of Christ Disaster Response Team, and we'll have some more to say about this here in just a minute. But this organization is overseen by the elders of the Castle Hills Church of Christ in Vandalia, Ohio. Now, I hope that some of you who have been through the New Testament before, I hope you're already perhaps seeing some problems with this. But we'll talk about that some more in just a minute. So let's make some observations about this particular method that you see right here. First of all, and I think we have to start with the most basic, and that is, why would we even want to do it differently than the way the Lord showed us? Now, I admit, what we diagrammed earlier with the churches of Macedonia and Achaia and what the church at Pratmont did along with those 90, it's real simple. It's real simple. But why would we even want to do it any differently than the way the Lord showed us? I want us to think for a few minutes about how the New Testament has trained us all to think. It has trained us to ask important questions like, by what or whose authority do we do these things? And that's gleaned from the discussion in Matthew 21, verses 23 through 27. That's always an appropriate question to ask, right? I think I've mentioned this before, but used to be a man that served as an elder in the Embry Hills congregation over in the Atlanta area. And Sewell Hall told me that every time anybody proposed anything there for the church to do, it could sound like the most innocent thing in the world. It would just seem like it would be something even obvious that we would have authority for it. As soon as the proposal got out of somebody's mouth, he would say, all right, let's get out our Bibles. Let's get out our Bibles, and I want somebody to show me where we've got authority for this. He said he did it every single time. And it was not just that he wanted to make sure that they had authority, but you know what he was doing? He was implanting that thought in everybody's mind. He wanted that thought to be ingrained in every one of those elders' minds. And so what a great example that is. That's how we're trained to think, though. That's how the New Testament equips us. in that same context. The all-important question then is this from heaven or is it from men? That's the question that Jesus asked concerning the baptism of John. Is it from heaven or is it from men? Does it come from the Lord or is this something that man has come up with? We're taught, of course, not to go beyond the teaching of Christ in 2 John chapter 1 and verse 9. To not add to nor take from God's Word in Revelation 22 and 18 and 19. We're taught in 1 Timothy 4 and verse 6 to carefully follow the doctrine of Christ. And so when we have been trained to think in the proper way, then obviously when we see a method being used that's different from the method that we see in the New Testament, we're going to have some problems with that. Why are we doing it differently than the way the Lord showed us to do it? And so I believe that's a good place to start, and that's very fundamental. But then another question we need to ask is, do we want elders elsewhere deciding where our money should be sent? Do we want that? Not only should we not want that, does that not also violate 1 Peter 5 and verse 2? Look here again at that passage. We referred to it in the class on Sunday morning several times here recently. But in 1 Peter 5, let's just read verses 1 and 2. The elders who are among you, I exhort, I who am a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and also a partaker of the glory that will be revealed, shepherd the flock of God, which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion, but willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly. Shepherd the flock of God, which is among you. And that would involve overseeing the activities of that particular local church, including how the resources of that particular local church might be spent. And so, again, do we want elders elsewhere? Remember now, this organization, this Churches of Christ Disaster Response Team, it's overseen by the elders of that church there in Ohio. And they're receiving all these contributions and they're making decisions then as to, okay, what are we going to do? Where are we going to go with this next? Who's in the greatest need and so forth? They're deciding what's going to be done with our money. But now in contrast to that, think about what happened here. The elders here at Pratmont were certainly informed of the need. They assessed the need. They made a decision about how much to send. And then they informed the church here. You know what's good about that? It's right. Elders overseeing what we do here. Not handing it over to anybody else. Not letting a middleman decide what's going to be done with our money. It's interesting as you, again, go through the details of that relief effort in Jerusalem that we've referred to several times and that we even diagrammed. There was a measure of independence and autonomy even maintained by those churches in that effort, right? Although many local churches were involved, each church chose its own messenger. So there's some decision-making made right there at the local level, right? Each church selected its own measures, our own messengers, excuse me. It's also interesting, it says that each church had its own gift. There in 1 Corinthians 16, Paul says, okay, whomever you approve by your letters, whichever messenger you choose, I will send to bear your gift to Jerusalem. Now, I want you to think about the implications of that. I'm going to bear your gift to Jerusalem.
in the middleman organization, where is your gift? Where is Pratmont's gift? Or where might Oak Mountain's gift be? Or Perry Hill Road or whichever local church? Where is it? You know where it is? It's lost. I don't mean that the money's gone. But it's lost in a pool of funds. You got just a pool of funds now, right? And then they just take from that pool of funds. But you see now how the middleman has corrupted the whole process? How it's robbed some churches of their independence and autonomy and all this? So it's not just that the diagram looks different. Now that's a big problem, putting the middleman there as opposed to just sending direct. It's not just, though, that the diagram is different. It's that some very important underlying principles, such as autonomy and independence and elders overseeing only the flock which is among them, those things get violated too. And so in every direction that you turn on this, we've got some problems. We've got some problems. And obviously we want to be true to God's Word and in doing it. Related to the previous point, where is the authority for a church to even create a separate organization? Overseen by its elders, one to which other churches and individuals are asked to contribute. Remember, we've got this Churches of Christ Disaster Response Team. That's a separate organization. Now, I think there are those who would think, well, everything's good and fine about it because we've got the elders of this local church overseeing. I just can't find anything like that in the New Testament at all. So what we would say here in reference to this is concerning elders and their oversight. Yes, oversee the flock of God which is among you. We see that in 1 Peter 5 and verse 2. And yes, oversee the collective activities of that flock, including how the funds are spent. But no. Do not try to oversee anything else. Do not try to oversee anything else besides the flock which is among you. So again, you see what a problem we have here. But there's one other thing we want to talk about that we did not do in this situation. The church here did not send money to fund a work proposed by the Southside Church, one for which they didn't have sufficient funds. The money was sent to relieve their need. And that's the very way it's expressed in 2 Corinthians 8. In verse 14. Now, the reason why I'm phrasing this, and this may sound a little too vague to you, but here's the reason why we're putting it this way. Some reason this way, some of our own brethren. If one church, or many, can send to another to meet a benevolent need, why can't they do the same for some evangelistic endeavor? For some teaching effort that this church wants to engage in. Say, here's something we want to do, and we don't have the money for it, and so could you churches kind of help us out on this, and we'll kind of all work together and pool our funds together, and we'll get the job done. So what is the problem with that? Well, first and foremost, there's no example of such. And that ought to stand out to us. We do, however, have examples of churches not sending to other churches to aid them in the projects that they've undertaken. In every case, what we have is examples of churches sending directly to the preacher. To the preacher. You see that in Philippians 4 and also in 2 Corinthians 11, verses 7 through 9. Now, I don't have to explain God's wisdom in anything. If God says, shows us a picture of this is the way it's done, then that's good enough for me, whether I can figure it out or not.
But I think if we just think a little bit, think real hard, I think we can see the underlying principles as to why this is the case. Can we not see that this helps churches maintain their independence, their autonomy, and their equality? This is the way it's done. Churches sending directly to the preacher to support him. Now, on this matter of relieving their need, I think we need to go into a little bit more detail on this. I want you to suppose, let's just talk about this on an individual basis for just a minute. Suppose I have money to feed, clothe, house, and care for my family, and I make a contribution to the Lord according to my ability. All right, that's good. You're doing what you're supposed to do, right? But let's suppose that I decide I want to increase my contribution to $5,000 a week. There's so much more that needs to be done. So many preachers that need to be supported, and I want to do more. I want to contribute $5,000 a week. Would you consider me in need? Would you consider me an object of charity? Would you send me alms? And by the way, that's the way the relief effort is described in Acts 24 and verse 17. After Paul had delivered the aid to the church there in Jerusalem, he says, I have come to bring alms. So it's described as, would you give me alms? Again, would you consider me an object of charity? No, you might be thinking more in terms of calling somebody and getting me a mental evaluation, right? Do you see the difference? You see the difference? You see the difference between a need and something we might just desire to do? A local church is not in need just because it desires to meet its obligation to preach to the world. That's not a situation of need. Not like what's described in those passages in the New Testament. The all-important principle here in 2 Corinthians 8 and verse 12 from the passage Cody read, it is accepted according to what one has and not according to what he does not have. Now that would relate back to the example that I gave you, right? In fact, being an astute Bible student, you might remind me of that passage. Brian, don't worry. You can only do what you're able to do. Don't... You don't have the money to give $5,000. Well, what is true individually is also true congregationally. It is accepted according to what one has, not according to what one does not have. I think back on some of the works that we have been able to involve ourselves in here at Prattmont over the last several years. Some of the preachers that we've been able to support. And yes, even the relief effort that we sent to those brethren in Gonzales, Louisiana. There was a time when our resources here were very limited. There was a time when we could not do a lot of these things. But we've been blessed with some growth. We've been blessed with the generosity of you good brethren. And we've been able to do more. The last thing you want to do is take away that incentive. Don't you? The last thing you want to do is put a church in a perpetual state of dependence. Because once a church starts receiving from others, okay, I see y'all are not able to do some things you want to do. You know, we'll keep helping you. You know what happens a lot of times? You stay in that state of dependence. And that kind of works on an individual level too, doesn't it? It tends to work the same way on a congregational level. When it comes to evangelizing our community, our country, the world, every local church is equally related to this work. And that's just a fact. The mission field for Prattmont is the world. Oh yeah, we have a chance to have a greater impact on the people who are nearest to us, but our mission field is the world. The same thing is true of County Line over there, Perry Hill Road. Every local church is equally related to this task. In other words, Prattmont needs to do all it can to teach the gospel with all the resources it has. But here's what we must never do. We must never seek to do our work through another church. Use the resources we have in order to do all that we possibly can in teaching the world. We simply cannot have an arrangement where one group of elders is overseeing the activities of several or many churches. When we've got an arrangement like that, we know we're moving in a denominational direction. You know, these arrangements where you start putting churches together and pooling funds together, I don't think we would have ever, I'm not sure that brethren would have ever thought of even doing some of these things if they had had the proper conception of the church in the first place. We got to get away from thinking that the church is composed of local churches. When we think of the church as an association of local churches, it doesn't take us long to have or to not have much of a problem with them pooling their funds together and making arrangements where they're, you know, involved in these evangelistic works together and so forth. The proper conception of the church is all important. I've talked with a number of different brethren through the years who have come out of some of these practices. In every single case, they said, finally learning the distinction between the universal church and these local churches, to learn that the church is not composed of churches, he said, that's when the light bulb came on. That's when I knew where all of this came from. In every single case, that's what they said. And so let's wrap all this up in conclusion. To the best of its ability, may this church continue to do all God authorizes it to do. Nothing more and nothing less. To put it another way, let's make sure we do God's work in God's way so that God is glorified. But something else to consider in all of this, even if this church does all it's supposed to do, there's still a lot left for me to do. Don't ever think that the local church is the sole means of doing all that you're supposed to do. There's a lot for Brian Gibson to do, and there's a lot for you to do, above and beyond whatever the church may be involved in. I want to say one more thing before I bring it to a close. I know we're running out of time. The kind of things that we're studying here is probably apparent to all of you. These are not things that are right there on the surface. These are some things that take some study, and in some cases, some pretty detailed study. And I've had the occasion to study with some different people on some of these issues over the last several years. And for that reason, I've been very, very patient with those brethren. We have patiently worked together on these things because, again, it's not right there. It takes some study. And so, when it comes to things like this, yes, let's be patient with those with whom we may differ. But while I would exhort any of you to think, and especially any who might listen to this sermon over the internet, is please, please be willing to study. If you would like to study with me further on these things, please get in touch with me. And we'll go over these things carefully and slowly and painstakingly. We'll work on this as long as it takes. I'll listen to you and what you have to say. But above all, we'll get the scriptures out. And we'll have to finally decide what they say. And of course, always be willing to side with the Lord. If you don't already have your song book, get it out. We'll sing that song of encouragement here in just a moment. If there be any here tonight who need to respond to the invitation in any way, if your soul has needs,
terms of obeying the gospel or coming back to the Lord, please let that be known now as we stand and sing.